ain't no love, and it's sure not for pity. There ain't no love, 'cause you ain't around.
On this day, in 2013, the great Bobby Blue Bland passed away, one of the greatest blues singers of all time, and this is one of the most famous songs, Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City. Passed away on this day, and I have a collection full of Bobby Blue Bland, so remember him on this day. We are joined here in studio for the first time by Jenna Johnson, who is Maryland politics reporter for The Washington Post. Been reading her stuff. She came to Baltimore for the show today. Good to have you in studio. Jenna, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. John Bullock joins us once again, political activist and analyst in this town, once ran for office himself, professor of political science at Towson University. Good to have you with us, John.
Hey, great to be here.
And by phone, Jackie Wellfounder, conservative activist and blogger at JackieWellfounder.com. Jackie, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
So good morning, all, and join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this campaign, how you're going to vote, what you're thinking about, why you're going to vote that way, what may be happening. A lot of local races that are really key and important all across the state, in Baltimore and Montgomery County and Howard County and Baltimore County. Really some intense races going on, as well as the statewide races. 410-319-8888. So let's begin by the race at the top. The race for the top at the top. Pardon me, folks. Essentially watch this kind of come down to the wire in the Democratic side, on both sides actually, but Democratic side first, between Anthony Brown, Heather Mazier, and of course our Attorney General, who's The question is, I'm curious what you think where we are now. There's been a lot of talk about this late surge by Heather Mazier, mm-hmm. And what that might mean, if anything, in an election with a low turnout, when you look how low these turnouts are. Jenna, how do you see that?
Well, this is what she and all of her supporters were talking about yesterday. And the last few days is just that, you know, since the last polling was done, she launched her TV ads. She's been out in the community every single day, meeting with people, encouraging them to tweet and Facebook and call their friends and just spread the word about her candidacy. She's someone that's getting onto people's radar kind of at the last minute. They hope that that grassroots outreach, along with what's expected to be really low turnout in a primary that's earlier than it normally will be, will work in her favor, and that even though she's 30 points behind Anthony Brown right now, that somehow, you know, she'll surge ahead.
You know, it's interesting hearing about the surge, and I get it's funny, the surge, but I get emails from basically all the campaigns, and I've seen that being reflected in some of Missouri's communications. At the same time, you would also see that coming from other campaigns as well. So Ganser would say something similar, that we're picking up steam. I mean, any campaign wants to say that, you know, it's not over, we're picking up steam, we're moving there. I think you're correct in terms of Mazier sort of getting on people's radar a little bit late. At the same time, you have somebody like Gansler, who's saying, hey, I can, you know, reach out to voters across the state. You have somebody like Brown, who's still making his rounds and has a lot of deep support across the state. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. The other part of it also is, if Missouri is able to get a big turnout and a big surge at this point, it'd be interesting to see who comes in second, who comes in third as well. That's also part of this analysis, too.
Jackie?
I actually had the opportunity to meet her this weekend for the first time. Huh. She, Delegate Mazur, came to Salisbury. She was at a Third Friday event, and I got to talk to her. And I told her up front that I was a Republican, but that I really appreciated the way she's run her campaign. And I've been saying for quite a while that people shouldn't underestimate her. And quite frankly, I think she's done a really great job in the grassroots arena. And I hope she gives these guys a run for their money. I think people might be surprised at the results tomorrow.
Two things, I think, with that. I mean, we may be. We don't know. Things could turn upside down, especially given the nature of this race and the fact that so few people turned out. In the Sun over the weekend, I was interested on Saturday to see the chart they put out about voter turnout and how it has fallen over the years from a high in, I think, was it 1992, and the last election here, the turnout was abysmally low at 19% for all voters combined. So, I mean, in a small, in a low voter turnout, if you have a get-out-the-vote campaign, anything could happen. I mean, you know that Anthony Brown's going to be gathering his forces and pulling people out. But the thing about Mazier's supporters, more than I think even Gamzo's supporters, is that they are all widely committed to her. You know, that I think is a difference in the energy at the end here.
Right. I think there's a certain passion that you're seeing from the Mazier camp. I think from the Gansler camp, you're seeing more strategic and posturing. But I think from the Missouri folk, it really is a sort of passion that we really believe in what she stands for. And I think that's part of what's happening now. People are seeing that she seems to be the message that she's sending and that she's really attracting a certain degree of support. But given the low voter turnout, that really helps incumbents. And so
I've never been a prognosticator. I won't do that. I don't even try to predict what will happen. But one thing, let's say, for example, if Heather Mazier, the move on something else, got in the 20th percentile and actually beat Gansler, right. Maybe Brown, and if Brown won, she'd beat Gansler. Then it seems to me, in some ways, Jenna, she is in a position of becoming a political leader of the progressive movement in the state, in the Democratic movement, and that could have some interesting consequences in years ahead if that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think her candidacy in general has been an outlet for people who think that Maryland, even with all of these progressive laws that have been passed, is still not progressive enough, that it's not doing enough, especially for working class families, to help them get ahead.
I think you're right, and it positions her for doing anything she might want to do in the future, right? So there are congressional seats, senatorial seats. But the other thing is interesting about this candidacy is if you looked at another state, this might have been a third-party candidate. But this is a major party candidate in the state, and so that really does position her in a very different way.
Absolutely. And there's these surges going on that we won't talk about today, but there's an equally interesting race taking place in Chicago like this right now where there's a woman who's of Nigerian descent, an African-American woman in Chicago who is taking on the incumbent mayor of Chicago, and she's like Heather Mazier and kind of surging up from the bottom, even though that's not until next year, in February, but another day for that one. But and on the Republican side, any surprises, Jackie?
Not really surprises per se. I think things, well, I guess you could say there was a surprise for me because I was initially supporting Larry Hogan, but I ended up switching to David Craig because I really liked what I saw from him a lot better. I liked the way he was running his campaign. I liked the way he was reaching out. It wasn't just about him. He was doing a lot of outreach and support for state delegate and state senate candidates as well. And I really admire Jeannie Hathaway. So there was a change in that regard. But overall, I think it's kind of been par for the course.
We'll see. I mean, this could be an interesting way. I think Hogan's way out in front on this, and it seems that this is probably Hogan's to lose at this moment. Because when you look at these numbers also, that even though the numbers are really low in terms of who comes out, the Republican numbers are actually higher in terms of the percentage of their voters that come out in a primary, which I think is interesting.
Although, and also in early voting, they showed up in a smaller percentage than Democrats. So we'll see if they really are as excited about this race as the candidates keep telling us they are.
We're going to find out tomorrow night or Wednesday morning, but probably tomorrow night, unless it's really, really tight in some of these races. So I'm curious what you think about the importance of this campaign is here overall. How really important do you think this is for what the direction the state may take?
On the Republican side or both?
Okay. On both sides.
I think it's important. I mean, I think even for the Republican side, I looked at it a few months ago and it seemed like there wasn't much energy or activity around it. And then all of a sudden it seemed like, there's a sleeping giant that got awoken. And so it's going to be interesting to see who comes out of that piece because – it's not as if just because you win a Democratic primary that you automatically win the governorship. And so I think some people feel like even if Brown is successful in doing that, that doesn't mean that he's instantly going to be the next governor. And then there are many people who may feel that they've been overtaxed, they may be disenchanted with the O'Malley administration, and then by extension Brown. And so that may have some blowback on him as it relates to a general election. So it'll be interesting to see who comes out of both sides and what happens in that general election.
Exactly. I think the general is going to be much more tense than everyone is expecting. I think there's a lot of discontent out there.
Yes.
Among independents, among Democrats, mm-hmm. about taxes, that they feel like they just continue to be squeezed and squeezed and squeezed, and they want that to change.
I mean, I think that will be a big issue in this campaign. There'll be a lot of things that will be an issue in this campaign. I think that this will be a, I don't know how close it'll be, but it has potential being a close general election. But we have to see how this kind of turns out and how aggressive whoever the Republican candidate is taking on whoever the Democratic candidate right. is. I mean, it all will be defined about who the candidates will be. Mm-hmm. That's what will define that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's some interest,
right.
I mean, they really will, you know. And I think that when you look at some of the other races around that are happening last minute, and folks, I'd like to hear what you think about these at 410-319-8888, because there's some really intense local races happening here. We get to the AG's race. Well, let's go to the AG's race first. Because that's interesting as well. Because all of a sudden you have the polls all saying that John Carden is ahead. Of course, some people coming out of the poll in Baltimore, the largest facility here on Cold Spring Lane during the early voting, many people came out saying things like, I voted for Ben Carden.
Oh, wow. Look,
you know, it's so real. No, really, that was the take that people took, and so you have this race. You see Brian Frosch kind of surging here again, mm-hmm. pushing at the last minute. But I'm curious how he thinks this is going to wash out.
I do not know. I find the AG's race the most fascinating race on the ballot right now, just because it really could go any way. I mean, voters barely know about the gubernatorial candidates at the top of the ballot, let alone people further down. And, you know, Carden, in addition to all the platforms that he's pushing, has name recognition. And a lot of times in a primary where voters are not as educated as they should be, it comes down to that. But Brian Frosch has gotten a lot of support recently. The governor's out there for him. A lot of his colleagues are out there for him. Newspaper editorial boards have been gushing about him and pushing for him. So we'll see. I mean, in the polls, he's been catching up with Carden. Money-wise, he's been, collecting and keeping up. And we'll see how it turns out tomorrow.
You know, this is an absolutely fascinating race. I do agree. And you mentioned sort of low information voters, people saying I voted for Ben Carden. And so if you look at even what's happening around Frosch, yes, he's gotten all the major endorsements, whether it be labor, his colleagues, editorials. But then also what you see him doing is also having some negative campaigning, right, that's going at Carden. So I've seen some mailers that have said, this is not Ben Carden. He is not his uncle. Or talking about, you know, or his campaign or the TV commercial talking about the misuse of funds or him missing his votes, all those things that are coming up. And so I think Frosch is really in a position to really trying to say that, look, I'm the best person for the job. I do believe the competition is between those two. I know Brave Boy's running a good campaign as well, but I do think it's going to come down between Frosch and Carden. And again, it'll be anybody's guess to see what happens, but you're right, that name recognition really matters. And if he does win, honestly, it will be largely because of that.
Well, and just to share an experience I had when I was at an early polling location in Columbia, there was a woman who came out and I had asked her who she had voted for. And for AG, she had said, I voted for someone named John, but not spelled the regular way. It was J-O-N. And she's like, and I'm trying to remember what his last name was. Wow. And she pulled out her voter guide and she had underlined one thing in the voter guide. And it was something that he had said along the lines of, you know, how unfair it is that African-Americans are jailed at a much higher rate than whites. And that was something that, as she read through her voter guide, jumped out at her and made her vote for him.
That's
so
interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, in defense of voters out there, there are some who are doing their research and basing it on things that candidates are actually saying.
Right. Jackie, you want to jump in on that at all?
I was just going to say, I think this will be another interesting race to watch, and there's a bigger dynamic than some people might realize, because I mean, I'm a big social media person, and I do see a lot of support for Frosch via social media. So, you know, I think it could be interesting to see how it turns out. For me personally, I'm kind of disappointed that I haven't seen much from our GOP candidate, and I know some of my colleagues are going to hate me for saying that, but I haven't seen much of him in the press or anything like that. Like, I know he's attended some GOP events and that sort of thing, but I haven't really seen a big push as far as, you know, getting his name out there. So I guess maybe we'll see that hopefully after the primary.
Yeah, I think unlike the governor's race, we'll have to see who wins that, but whoever wins the AG's race, I think on the Democratic side, is going to have a hard time losing.
Right. I agree. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's a good way to put that, Mark.
A really hard time losing. So so that'll be interesting to watch. There's nothing in the comptroller's race to watch.
Right.
But there are some interesting races around around the state. And here in Baltimore, when you have you have the state's attorney's race that mm-hmm. has really kind of shifted momentum and gear. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. you could clearly see that Greg Bernstein, who has kind of seemed to have panicked a bit here at the end to make a push because mm-hmm. Mosby came up, and he didn't expect her to surge the way she has surged mm-hmm. at the end here. To the point, we'll say here, you know, we invited him to come to WEA for a debate that would be hosted by, that I would host along with Anthony McCarthy. And the email that exchanged between his office and our producers and between his office and Mosby's office was that he would not debate on WEAA, and especially if I was going to be hosting him, he would not debate on WEAA. Which, that's really interesting, I found.
Ouch.
But that's okay. But I find this race very interesting because I think that we're seeing, I'm really curious why we think it's exploding the way it's exploding in this city. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at, I mean, I know the critique of Greg Bernstein in terms of transparency and not being open to the community. That's part of the critique. When you look at the stuff that Marilyn's brought up about this rape trial that this guy keeps not getting convicted, that's in some ways only more a matter of the law and how the law around sexual assaults is really mm-hmm. works against the victim in our communities. But at any rate, I'm curious to see how you see this panning out, John.
Yeah, for me, you know, the most fascinating local race is that state's attorney's race. And you can tell that you mentioned, you know, Bernstein sort of now maybe panicking. You might have mentioned that. And so you see the
maybe
negative.
That was a pejorative. I shouldn't say panic, but he became concerned.
Yeah, but he became concerned. Yeah, and so you see, you know, some of his ads that have, you know, gone after her record, right? So you just mentioned that, you know, that rape trial. And he's mentioned in his ads that, well, she's never tried a murder trial. She's never tried a rape trial. And that's sort of his piece. But interestingly enough, on the way over here, I did see the Mosby campaign out doing a sine wave. Saw Marilyn on one corner, saw Nick on another corner, and two of their other supporters or workers with them, right? So she is gaining some traction around the city. Now, you also look at the legal community. There are a number of African-American attorneys and others who are supporting her. But at the same time, you also have a number of attorneys, African-American and otherwise, supporting Bernstein, but in a more quiet way. So I think, you know, the Mosby campaign is making a lot of headway and making a lot of noise. At the same time, you have Bernstein, who is in a position, and some people would say, look, he may not be perfect, just like no other person is perfect, but at the same time, has he had some kind of glaring error? The other thing I would mention, too, is this is almost a replay of the last election, where you had someone like Bernstein challenging the incumbent, who was Jessamy, saying she's ineffective, she's not doing her job. The only thing that's reversed now is that you have the race and gender thing being reversed. So you had a white male versus African-American female, now you have African-American female versus a white male, and you think about the demographics of the city, which could also play very interestingly into it.
You know, one of the things that I think people don't talk about a lot in this race, at least openly, mm-hmm. is race.
Right.
And the issue of race is all through the state attorney's race in Baltimore. I mean, it is a function of the anger of large portions of the black community about Greg Bernstein and not prosecuting police, whether he should or shouldn't have. You can debate, I'm saying that's a big piece of what's going on mm-hmm. here. And that fact that Pat Chesney lost as a black woman, losing to somebody white, and the whole issue of his Jewishness, uh-huh. being Jewish, is being played, unfortunately, in this campaign. So there's a lot of, to me, dangerous undertones uh-huh. to this campaign in the city that people do not want to talk about.
Yes. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, I tell my students this. You tell anybody in politics, look, if in order to understand politics in America, you have to understand race, and particularly in a place like Baltimore, right. It does play very heavily. I mean, the fact that historically when you were able to first get an African-American state's attorney in a city like Baltimore, that was a major accomplishment. And then to see that, you know, go back and forth is also something that, you know, people are continuing to talk about. And I remember being in a meeting in West Baltimore with the Western District Police Community Council meeting, and Mosby was there and also Bernstein was there, but there was questions around prosecuting those cases, whether it be Wordersheim or any other case that it came up. So there are some high-profile cases that I think people are hearkening back to in this election.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see how this plays out. I think this does play to what people perceive as the white and black power divide in Baltimore City, mm-hmm. and whatever that means and how mm-hmm. it's complex it is. And it's like that, you're seeing that played out, I think, in the state's attorney's race more than any other race that I can think of. Mm-hmm. In this campaign. We're going to take a very quick break and come right back with our guest. Continue looking at this race. Tomorrow is election day. You got to get out there and vote, folks. Don't forget to do that. It's important for all of us to get out there and vote. We're going to take a break with Bobby Blue Bland. Do what you set out to do. We'll be right back.
Go on and hate me. That's what you want to do.
I know it's soon. Where do all the hippies be? South Beach, South Beach. Where the dancing is elite? South Beach, South Beach. Fly, it looks so neat. When we're coming down the street, roaring down. Baby,
that was one of the great songs back in the day, South Street, the Orlans. And born on this day is Rosetta Hightower, who was part of the Orlans, the great late 50s and early 60s singing sensation. So South Street was a major hit with many of us. Anyway, back to our conversation. We are here talking with Jenna Johnson, Maryland politics reporter for The Washington Post, Jackie Wellfounder, conservative activist and blogger at JackieWellfounder.com, Dr. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson University, and you at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the Mosby-Bernstein race? We'd love to hear what you're thinking on some of the things going on right now in the city of Baltimore between Will Hanna and Senator Gladden, and that whole controversy exploding around Will Hanna. We'll touch a bit of that. 410-319-8888. And locally, in one of the council medic districts in Baltimore County, there is a huge race going on. And I will say as disclaimer, I have to say as disclaimer, my wife, Valerie Williams, is actually working for one of the candidates, so I put that out there. I'm not involved in any of that. I'm completely staying away from that fray, but I have to be full disclosure here. But Wade Katch and Todd Huff, this race in Baltimore County is built around the issue of development and about character issues, and it's a really interesting to watch. It's become a very tight race. Jackie, what's your thought on that?
I admit, unfortunately, this isn't one that I've followed closely. The only person I'm pretty familiar with in the county is my friend Tony Campbell, who is running for, I believe,
county executive.
Tony.
It'll be interesting to see if he wins, how that ends up in that county executive race on the Republican side in Baltimore County. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
But we've seen in this one race in Baltimore County, this is the only kind of competitive race there at the moment, and it's really kind of divided this Republican primary voters in a major way, and it's around the issues of development and ties to developers and developer dollars, which leads right to county executive, Democrat county executive, Kamenetz's office and the power of developers in his office, mm-hmm. and building up farmland and questions of character over over drunk driving and things like that. So this is a really interesting place to watch, and we'll mm-hmm. see how this plays out on Wednesday. This could be an upset as well. We'll have to watch and see what that is going to happen with that race. So tell me what you all think are the races to watch legislatively right now that you're seeing here that you are really kind of focused in on.
Well, It's funny. I'll just say one thing about the Baltimore County thing. You definitely are right that on the Democratic side and the Republic side, you're seeing the role the development is playing. So you're seeing, you know, candidates endorsing candidates, some that are challenging incumbents based upon, you know, their support for development. So it is going to play big into those elections and then afterward, most certainly. So you can tell that it's a huge priority, at least for candidates and others in Baltimore County.
Local developers are the defense contractors in Congress. You know, they're the wealthy lobbyists of Congress. In local politics, they play a huge role. Mm-hmm. And in some offices, like in Baltimore County right now, you can see that people who are invested heavily or work for large development firms are in the county executive's office. They're managing all the sustainable offices, all the environmental offices, are managing the development offices. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge issue. It's not a small issue.
It's not going away. Now, you asked about the legislative races. Yeah. Now, that's where it gets interesting, too. So on the drive over here, saw some signs for the 45th district, right? So we have at the top of that ballot, you have Julius Henson, who's trying to, get
McFadden.
Up there versus McFadden and seeing some of those signs. That's interesting. We can get back to that. I think on the delegate side, it's also going to be interesting. I have a number of friends and colleagues who are over on that district who are running. I think Corey McCray is running a great campaign. I think he's looking really
good.
It's
a textbook campaign.
In terms of having that grassroots support, having union support, labor support, and then just having, you know, support of other respected politicians, I think is really going to work very well in his favor. I think for the Senate race, that's going to be very, very interesting. Again, there's that baggage that Henson brings to the table, but then there are also those who are not enamored with the incumbent. So it could be interesting.
So, I mean, the thing here about that campaign that I just want to focus on for a moment with Julius Henson and Nat McFadden, the sitting senator, one is about a longstanding incumbency, and that's been part of the campaign. But the other is, I mean, we have to remember Julius Henson, you know, was the one who was indicted for trying to get black voters not to turn out in a primary. Mm-hmm. He got slammed more than his white counterparts who actually hired him, which was People's Hall as an obscenity of justice as well, of injustice, I should say. On the other hand, he's run a really nasty campaign. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, it's been, and there's been throughout this election, whether it's his campaign or other campaigns in the Democratic primary, the nastiness and the ugliness is kind of taken over. I think that may be turning off a lot of voters. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, I hear that from a lot of voters. I was out with Doug Gansler in the Towson area yesterday, and we were at an ice cream shop, and this elderly man came over and said, you know, your campaign has just left this bad taste in my mouth. You know, you were attacking on everyone. And so I think there are a lot of voters who are just kind of tired of the nastiness and tired of how negative some of this has gone. But at the same time, studies have found that, you know, races that are intense and that are controversial and that get, you know, both sides fired up and firing at each other tend to grab the attention of voters more than, you know, sleeper campaigns where you don't really hear much from anyone.
Jackie?
I think that's true, and I mean, we've certainly seen some interesting races, and you know, unfortunately, Republicans have that reputation of that circular firing squad, and again, for me, I get heat sometimes because, if there's an issue that I think vetting is important, and I think we need to be able to be constructively critical of our own side as well. I mean, there's been an interesting dynamic with our Senate Minority Leader, David Brinkley, and Michael Huff. That's been a fairly contentious race. And then on the county level with Steve Shue and Laura Newman and the Anne Arundel County Executive race, that one's been hugely contentious. And so I agree that for some people, I hear both sides. I hear many, even with the gubernatorial race, there were some mailers that the Craig campaign just sent out. On one end, I hear people saying, oh, they went negative, I don't like that. But on the other end, you know, people feel like, well, they're putting important information out there, and it does raise an awareness on the race. So I think it can work both ways depending on how it's done. But I think when things get overly negative and they turn personal, that's really unfortunate.
No, most certainly. I think that was, you know, you had mentioned earlier, Gansler, and I think that was one of his challenges that he knew he was behind. And so sort of when he, began to sort of attack not only, you know, Brown, but then Missouri, it can make someone look as if they may be further behind than they are, but it also turns off voters, right? So on one hand, negative campaigning will drive down the other person's numbers, but it'll also drive down your numbers as well. In the case of Julius Ensign, from his perspective, he's him against the world. I mean, or him against the Democratic Party, right? I mean, so he's like, look, I've gotten out, I did what I did. They're trying to ruin me financially. I don't have any other options, so I'm out here. And so his back is against the wall, and he's fighting as if his back is against the wall, and it's coming out. But you're right that I think unless some people will be turned off not only by the robocalling and that whole debacle around that, but then also the type of campaign that he's running. And then thinking about, McFadden does have support from establishment Democrats throughout the state. And so some people look at that as a great thing. Some people look at that as, see, this is why our communities haven't progressed, because they're all in lockstep. So whoever is motivated to come out will have an impact on the results there.
410-319-8888. Where are you on these elections? Who do you support and why? And what do you think is going to happen tomorrow? Do you even care what happens tomorrow? 410-318.
Good question.
319-8888. Yeah, I mean, I think there is a. These campaigns seem to have come down to only interest either those folks who are deeply involved in politics, the established mm-hmm. politics, or those who are insurgents. Other than that, I think our politics today, Jenna, has kind of bored most people.
Yeah, and in a primary, for a lot of voters, they look at a slate of candidates from the same party who basically believe in the same things. And it takes a lot more work to kind of figure out what the differences are. I mean, even in our office, we kind of had to sit down one day and try to figure out, looking at just the Democratic candidates, what really are the differences?
Right.
They all are for more pre-kindergarten classes.
Right.
But yet there's different variations on how far they would go and how they would pay for it and things like that. So especially this year, another one they've been divided on is Heather Mazier wants to legalize marijuana and tax it.
Right.
The others do not want to do that. But there haven't been that many other stark differences on issues. And I think that, it's hard to capture the passion of voters when you don't have that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why some of the negativity comes out, because it's like, well, if we're all the same policy wise, well, what's the difference?
Right.
It's a personality thing. And so Mark, you mentioned before, in the 40s, looking at, Will Hanna. And so, again, you have somebody who's challenging, but then there's a personal issue or a legal issue that comes about that then makes a big difference. Or if it's between, the attorney general candidates, right, you try to stake out something on a personal level, because policy wise, there isn't a whole lot of difference between many of these candidates.
No, there's not. And I think that you're going to see Will Hanna, by the way, is coming on Anthony McCarthy's show tonight.
Good.
should be interesting to see what happens there. So I'm curious. Let's go to the phones here at 410-319-8888. We have a comment from, is this the Charles Robinson?
It's Robinson. Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
I thought you couldn't make the show today, man. What are you doing here?
I listen to you, Mark. I listen to you. So I was like, I guess I ought to say something, but let me say first and foremost that this race is probably going to have one of the lowest turnouts of any. I know Jenna has written about this already, and I think it's hard to kind of put a finger on why that is, but I think part of it is this apathy that's unfortunately been quite pervasive in the last couple of elections, except when, it's a nationalized election, obviously, when the president is running. The other thing is, I think that we have a lot of what I would call, and I think you guys have kind of touched on it a lot, by saying these simmering underlying issues. The negativity, that's to be expected. Heck, I don't think we had a non-negative race in the last 15 years. But the other part is that there's really nothing to get people excited. Obviously, the folks who are running for governor, that's kind of driving a lot of it. But when you talk to both Republicans and Democrats, what you hear, I think, at least what I'm hearing, is an apathy that really this is what we have. I'm not necessarily satisfied, and so I think that's part of it. And the last is these personal vendettas. I mean, you can go down to Prince George's County, Baltimore City, mm-hmm. heck, they even got them on the Eastern Shore. And these personal vendettas are, you know, have made this election more, how can I say, I'm pissed off at somebody. That's the way to describe it. I'm just pissed off at somebody. And I don't know if that's great politics, but it daggone sure makes for great theater and politics.
Mm-hmm. Well, is I think, Charles, what you hit on hit the nail on the head, that it's become like theater.
Yes, it is.
On, for some campaigns. When I was moderating, not moderating, I was part of the questioning the debate on the AG's race that took place at the University of Baltimore Attorney General's race, watching especially the two men go at it back and forth, and Aisha sitting on the side, kind of the same thing has happened with Heather Mazzini.
Same thing, right.
You know? That has become like theater, and I guess that does in some ways excite some people, but I am one of those folks, when I question these guys individually on the air, and we'll confront them with it, it just, for me, it turns me off. It becomes, what are we, with this is kind of nitpicking around issues that are not as critical as, you know, are you for or against Megan's Law? Well, we know. I mean, they get in such minutia that I think people get tired of it. And that's one of the reasons I think while on one hand we're saying, Jenna, that it perks people's interest in campaigns, what studies say. On the other hand, it may also drive down participation.
Yeah. And, I mean, some of the best elections that we've seen over history are where people are passionate and when they're inspired and when they're voting for something because, you know, there's one issue that they're really passionate about and they want to see a change on that issue. Or there's a candidate who inspires them and gets them out to the polls. And that doesn't happen in every election.
No, and I think you're seeing some of that. I'm going to go back to Charles. I'm glad you called in. Looking forward to having you join us on Wednesday.
I'm looking forward. I can't wait to see the outcome.
Me too. All right, brother. Take care. We'll be talking in the next couple of days.
Uh-huh.
All right. So, and of course, Charles Robinson is the Maryland State reporter for Maryland Public Television, who joins us often. And now that we had Jen on the show, we'll have them both on here together soon. So 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let me go right to the phones here and see what our listeners are thinking. Keith, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Keith.
I agree with the latter caller in that, you know, a lot of the issues are the same. And so it's a matter of boiling down to, so who do you vote for? I'm particularly looking at Anthony Brown. And the reason why I'm looking at I'm going back to something that Travis Smalley said a long time ago when he was speaking to the African American community about holding these people accountable that are always coming out, they want the black vote, and then after that you're not gonna see Brown anymore. So in my opinion, Brown is clueless about the needs of people in the inner cities. He's clueless. And just because he's biracial, now we're getting to the point where we're picking biracial people. You know, I could care less about his race. I just don't really see anything that Brown has really done for the African-American community.
Well, that'll be interesting how that plays out in this election when it comes to where the vote comes out for Anthony Brown and the African-American community. I mean, I've heard both sides, people arguing this. Somebody the other day on my program arguing off the air because we were just talking this aside. Yes, I voted for Brown because we need to have somebody black in office. And this is important. And somebody else saying, no, I'm voting for Heather Mazzini because we need some change in this state. It's not going to come otherwise. And that's it'll be interesting how that plays out in the black vote. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think you mentioned something, Jen, about being when people were excited about something, when they're for something, and I think as opposed to, well, I'm against something, right? So people are able to come out a little bit more. Clearly, you know, Missouri is the most progressive in that race. And I think there are a lot of people who are really energized, particularly around that marijuana legislation. I mean, to say that, OK, we would, you know, tax it and regulate it and that money would go toward education. People are like, you know, that I'm voting for something. Right. Then there are others who say, you know, this is an opportunity to elect the first African-American governor. But then there are some legitimate critiques that some have of Brown and say, well, look, I mean, from Gansler's perspective, and he said it quite inelegantly at the outset of the campaign that, well, he wants to be the first black governor. But here I was. was, you know, running, you know, Barack Obama's campaign in Maryland before, you know, Brown was associated with it. And so he talks about what I did in Charm City Lacrosse and the things I've done in Baltimore. And you see in some of his commercials, he's mentioned, you know, the impact he's had on people's lives. So I mean, everyone sort of has their story to tell, but race is going to be part of it. And, you know, some, you know, of us would say, you know, everybody's our skin folk and this is our kinfolk. And so some would say, well, yeah, he may be African-American or maybe biracial or what have you, but what does that have to do with politics? And so one thing Missouri said is, I'm not running to make history. And I think that's also resonating with people, even though she's openly, you know, gay. She has an African-American running mate. She's not saying I'm running for history. She said, or make history. I'm running because I want the job. So it's very interesting.
Let me turn to Jenna and then Jackie real fast. Jenny?
Yeah. So, I mean, both with Brown and with Mazir, they're both running what could be historic races. Mm-hmm. You know, the first African-American governor, the first openly gay governor in the whole country. And I'm actually kind of surprised that I don't hear about that more in their advertisements, in debates, when they're out talking to people. You know, both of them have kind of said, you know, this is a huge part of who I am, but I'm not going to use it on the trail. But people are picking up on that. I was at the Pride Parade in Baltimore, and, you know, there was a sign that said, you know, Heather Mazier, first LGBT governor in the country, you know, Deb Mazier, first lady of Maryland. And as they walked down the street, people were rallying and screaming and becoming emotional. And so there is that, there's definitely that movement out there, even if the candidates aren't publicly talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And Jackie?
Well, I've seen some big names, or what I perceive as bigger names, speaking out for Delegate Mazier. I mean, Melissa Etheridge has sent emails for her and advocated for her on social media, as well as Chelsea Handler. She sent out an email for her. But I really think, I mean, the apathy is so unfortunate, and I think grassroots is really what is going to make a difference. I do a lot of door knocking, and oftentimes I'm in areas where people told me they've never had somebody knock on their doors. And that's one of the reasons why I really respect Heather's campaign, because I, from what I see, she's doing a lot of outreach. You know, she's doing a lot of door knocking and festivals and visiting churches and spending a lot of time in communities. I mean, for her to come to our little Third Friday event here in Salisbury, I just thought that was great. So I really think it could tip the scales for her.
That's very interesting. I think that there's going to be a lot of interesting on Wednesday to look at what I call the shoe leather candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And see how they turn out in this campaign. The Corey McCrae's, who are running real hard, going door to door here for his House Delegate seat. People think he may win. Mm-hmm. Bill Henry's shoe leather campaign doesn't have as much money as Joan Carter Conway. He's out there knocking on doors and really pushing and made a race out of this.
Right.
Heather Mazier's a shoe leather candidate. Wade Catch in Baltimore County's a shoe leather candidate. I'm interested to see how that really works. People are really doing the old fashioned way of knocking on doors and lawn signs. It'd be very interesting to see how this turns out that way. 410-319-8888. Russ, you're on the air.
Mark, to you and your guests.
Thank you.
A couple of thoughts ran through my mind, Mark, after I heard you say whoever wins the Democratic primaries will have a hard time losing the general. And I think that our city and our state suffers because of that. I think that a viable Republican Party in this state would make Baltimore and Maryland both much healthier. But the Republicans, they keep shooting themselves in the foot with these candidates they put up, you know, the early types. I mean, we've had some wonderful Republicans in this state. You know, Mac Mathias, for one, Theodore McKeldin. I mean, they're old school Republicans, but they were excellent. I feel like I could vote for. For example, I thought they really shot themselves in the foot when they ran Salisbury against Glendenning, because Helen Bentley, Miss Bentley, she would have won that election. I would have voted.
But she lost the primary, though.
Reputation. But what I wanted to say sometimes to voters is that sometimes we don't recognize the issues and the importance of the issues because we look for the entertainment element, or we look for the, oh, he's gay, she's gay element.
Right.
And we miss the significance of the actual facts of the matter. And one good example of this, in my mind, sticks with me, is back in the 60s, early 70s, I know your guests may not be that old, but there was a guy named Evan Bayh, the son of Birch Bayh in Indiana, and he waged a hell of a campaign against wiping out the Electoral College and making it one man, one vote.
Right, right.
Now, had he succeeded in that, which he didn't, we wouldn't have gotten George Bush, because George Bush lost both of the popular votes in his elections. and what how much better off would we be? And like that. So I just wanted to point that out and say, you know, when you vote, make your vote count by voting for people who are really up on the issue, and that you, we the people, understand the issues so right. we can do our part in this thing, because without us, the system doesn't work.
Russ, thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Mark.
Always good to hear from you. Let me ask you this question. It popped in my head, and one of my producers said as well, that let's, for argument's sake, just for argument's sake, let's say Heather Mazur wins, just for argument's sake.
Mm-hmm.
What does that set up in the general election if she wins? Because it becomes a very different general election if she wins than if Anthony Brown wins, I think.
Look, I'll tell you this.
This is conjecture, but I think it's important because it's talking about the political mindset of the state. What do we think about that? You want to jump in, Jenna, first?
Well, let me just jump in and say something that I don't think any of us have said yet, in that this is still a very long shot, even with all the movement. But theoretically, you know, it would make for a much more interesting general election because Mazur is so progressive. And there are some Democrats out there who are kind of on the fence, you know, and especially on issues of you know, increasing taxes on the most wealthy to help out the rest of the state. I think that that's something that could turn off some more conservative Democratic voters.
Look, I agree.
Go over to Jackie. Then
sure.
Jackie, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, as far as my Republican friends, some of them have said they hope Heather wins for that reason.
So that's why you've been complimenting her campaign this morning. None of us saw through that.
Honestly, our local newspaper just did an article, and they were like, okay, and it was kind of a silly analogy, but, you know, if you're on a pirate ship and they have you on the plank and they're asking you, okay, you're a conservative, but which Democrat would you vote for? And I said, well, she's the furthest from me ideologically, so I could never support Heather Mazur, but I really respect the way she's run her campaign. And when I met her here in Salisbury, I mean, she's very engaging, she's very warm, and she even said to me, it's not just about Republican or Democrat, it's about the issues. So I can understand why she's developed such a following, and I'm not as dismissive as some of my colleagues. I think she'll be hard to beat.
You know, I think it does make a very interesting general election if that were to happen. I will say Maryland's a progressive state, but not as progressive as we like to believe. And so when it gets down to a general election, you have whether we're talking about an African-American male, whether we're talking about openly gay female, again, that's going to cause some waves. And there are some people who are not going to vote for either one of them just because of that. But then also on the policy level, as was just mentioned, that's going to be a huge thing. So if you were to take it from a continuum, you would say, okay, Mazur is the most progressive. You might put, Brown in the middle and say, even though he's a Democrat and he's still relatively progressive, Gantzer would be the more conservative out of those three candidates. So if you looked at the general election, I would see it would be tougher for a Republican to beat Gantzer, but it'd be easier, in terms of Mazur, and it would be, kind of be a toss-up in terms of Brown. So if you look at some of their policy issues, it sort of lays out that way.
It's right. I agree. 410-319-8888. Louise, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Louise.
I wanted to talk about the voter apathy.
Mm-hmm.
I met Heather Mazur at the at a farmer's market in Baltimore, and she's just as impressive in person as she was in the debate. But she asked me, was I, talking to people and, letting them know, about her candidacy and everything. So I did. I got on the phone, and this is what I'm hearing from everybody, that, it doesn't matter who you vote for. The candidates say one thing when they're campaigning, and then when they get into office, they, completely do another. And so this is where I think the voter apathy is coming from, that and the fact that, the primary was moved up. But, I heard that from more than one person when I, got on the phone. And on another note, I would just like to say that there is a difference between the candidates, and that is, to me, Heather Mazur is for the people. She's for the 99% of the people, and the rest of the candidates are for the 1%. So, that's where I stand on that. So, thank you
so much for your thoughts, Louise. 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Listen, I think the voter apathy thing and the comment about the strong Republican Party, it really is about the gaps. And that equity matters. We're about closing gaps. And I think when people hear one thing and see another, that's when you get apathy. And this state is extraordinarily conservative. And, you know, I mean, I'd go so far as to call it a blue Dixiecrat state. And, I mean, you know, we don't talk about that. We're south of the Mason-Dixon line. We act very, very southern and very conservative, and yet we mask very blue. And as long as that gap exists between action and sort of ideology and rhetoric and action, you're going to get this apathy, and you're going to get this continued creep in disparities. And I think we're getting to a point, however, where the gap is so wide that it's got to be addressed. And when people speak the truth to other people's power, they really do respond, because people do, I think, have an inherent analysis that we don't give them credit for. So I think that's what explains why Heather Mazur and Anthony Brown won't count those things, because they're playing to what has traditionally been a down-the-middle state that really trends very extraordinarily conservative.
Interesting. Jenna, how do you see that covering the statewide politics?
Yeah, I mean, kind of taking this Mazur hypothetical one step further, if she becomes governor, she still has to work with the General Assembly. They're still the ones who pass laws. During this last session, we saw the minimum wage bill come in, something that O'Malley was throwing his weight behind, kind of right. His last priority. And it got watered down and dragged out. Decriminalizing very small amounts of marijuana barely eked through because essentially the Black Caucus thwarted the system and, you know, found a way around longstanding chairman who was kind of standing in the way of it. When the discussion of extending legal protections to transgender individuals, there was a long, lengthy, passionate debate on the floor in which Democrats were standing up and saying things that you wouldn't expect Democrats to be saying, you know, in questioning, you know, the whole essence of who transgender people are. And so, I mean, it is, you know, for as being as blue and as progressive as Maryland appears mm-hmm. by the laws it has on its books, there is still a very conservative faction in the General Assembly.
That's a really interesting way to conclude this conversation, Jenna. I appreciate all the work and writing you've done. Jenna Johnson, who's Maryland politics reporter for The Washington Post. Look forward to you coming back and continue this conversation with us. And maybe pick up on that very comment and have a discussion about that would be very interesting.
Great.
For our next conversation. John Bullock, always good to have you in the studio. Thank
always
you so
much. Always great to be here. Thanks.
And Jackie Wellfounder, always great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We look forward to having you all back, and we'll see on Wednesday what happens. Tomorrow's time to vote. Get out there and vote, folks. Get out there and vote. We go out with the another great song from back in the day, remembering the Orlans because of the death of one of his great members today. This is Wah Watuti.